Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This is Jessica, and you're listening to the Asian Madness Podcast. Hi everyone, welcome back to the pod. Hope everyone's having a fantastic year so far, enjoying life and staying healthy. Really appreciate all the support you've shown me over the years. Running a podcast is not the easiest thing in the world. Writing and recording is one thing, but coming up with topics and researching is a whole different thing. Anyway, today's episode is probably some of you guys' favorite segment when it comes to my podcast. Creepy urban legends from around Asia. For real though, email me if you have any tales you think I need to cover, because I am just one person and I don't actually know that many urban legends. Google is definitely my friend, but I wouldn't mind some suggestions either. I did purchase a nice book about Asian ghost stories a while back, and I may start picking some of my favorite ones from that book in the future. Anyway, today we will look at five more stories that fall into either myth, lore, urban legend, or ghost story category. Some might be creepier than others, but it is definitely hard to find something everyone can collectively agree is scary. So without further ado, let's take a listen to the tales I've handpicked for you guys in this episode. And remember, fiction, truth, or somewhere in between, you decide. Let's begin. I'd like to start off with an urban legend I came across when I was younger and living in Taiwan. Origin, though, is unknown. There are various versions of this tale, but for time's sake, I will share two of those with you. This is a tale of the Red Eye Ghost. In the first version, allow me to transport you to a regular public high school in Taiwan, where hundreds of students roam the hallways in their neat uniforms from the early hours of the morning till sometimes 6 p.m. or even later. It's not uncommon for students in parts of Asia to stay late, as school doesn't really let out till around 4 or even 5 p.m. Couple that with after-school activities, some may stay till after dinner time. We will refer to our protagonist in this tale as Student A. Student A was your average high school student. They did all right in most subjects, didn't really cause trouble, and participated in after-school activities as needed. Although this school wasn't anything out of the ordinary, there was one small thing that he noticed. To his knowledge, most of the classrooms were either occupied by a class, a certain subject, or some other activity, except one room. Throughout the time that he had been at this school, he has never seen anyone enter or exit from that classroom, and the door has always remained closed. To add to the mystery, the windows to the classroom were also boarded up, which created a slight sense of unease. While most other students didn't seem bothered by this, Student A was weirded out, and his curiosity piqued. One day, he was staying late after school, and as he was making his way down the corridor to the staircase leading out, he stopped in front of that classroom. He tried the door and found that it was locked. Then he tried to find a gap in one of the windows to take a peek in, but found no gaps. It's unsettling, as if the school was determined to keep a secret locked in there. As he was about to give up and head out, he noticed that while the door was locked, there was a rather large keyhole on the door. He knew that the lights in the room were probably off, but he decided to take a look through the keyhole anyway, just to satisfy his curiosity. He knelt down and squinted, closing one eye and aligning his other eye to the keyhole. While he expected to see nothing, total darkness, or at most silhouettes of desks and chairs, he instead saw only red. Well, that's odd, he thought. Someone must have taped red tape over the keyhole to avoid having people like himself try and peek in. Seeing that this was the end of his adventures, he called it a day and left the school. For the next few days, something kept nagging at him at the back of his mind about this mysterious classroom. He asked some of his classmates if they knew what that room was for, but no one had an answer. Like him, no one had seen anyone enter or leave that room, never even seen what was inside. One day after school, he stayed late again for an after-school activity, which involved high schoolers from all grades. He decided to ask someone older, those that have been at the school for a year or two longer than him, if they knew anything about this. Student A approached a senior and casually brought up the subject of the strange classroom and how it seems abandoned. The senior gave him a look of understanding, but then told him that there was a strange legend about the room. According to him, the classroom was locked away because it was haunted by a ghost. Student A scoffed inwardly, thinking the senior was definitely trying to scare him as a prank. But what the senior said next sent shivers down his spine. According to school lore, he said, a woman ghost inhabited the classroom. The school had allegedly even hired traditional Taoist priests to come and seal off the room and contain the ghost. What's more notable is that the ghost has blood-red eyes. And that's when student A realized that the red he saw through the keyhole was not red tape, not red paper, but the ghost staring right back at him through the keyhole. In version number 2, we have a man traveling to an unspecified location and was looking for a hotel. To his annoyance, most of the hotels in the area seemed to be fully booked, and finally, he found a hotel with one room remaining. It wasn't a fancy hotel by any means, but hey, beggars can't be choosers. It was only a couple of nights, though. It would be fine, he reassured himself. As he finished the check-in process, the front desk clerk hesitated when handing him the key to the room. To his surprise, the clerk asked him, "Sir, are you sure you want to stay in that room?" If that doesn't raise alarm bells, I don't know what does. The man was slightly confused by this question. He asked the clerk what they meant by this, and if there was something wrong with the room. Was the toilet not functioning? Was there a water leakage? The clerk again hesitated, but ultimately told the man, "Whatever happens, whatever you hear, do not go to the room next to yours. Don't knock, don't try to talk to them, and don't attract any attention to yourself." Hearing this, the man simply thought that they may have a very difficult guest staying in the room next to his. And again, it's just a couple of nights. What's the worst that could happen? He took the old shaky elevator up to his room and began his long journey to his room, which was located at the very end of the hallway. You know what I've said about rooms located at the far end of the hallways. Bad vibes. As the man came upon his room, he looked at the room next to his and noticed that the door was a complete different color than the others, which made it stand out. There was no room number on it either, and the peephole had been taped shut, as if preventing whatever was inside from looking out. It looked more like a utility closet than a room. Although it made the man feel slightly uncomfortable, he decided not to overthink it. So in he went to his room and decided to go to bed soon after. He was awoken in the middle of the night. He sat up in bed and noticed strange sounds coming from the room next to his. It sounded like a woman crying. He suddenly remembered the clerk's words, but he decided he needed to find out for himself. He quietly slipped on his shoes, went out of his room, and put his ear on the door next to his. It really did sound like a woman crying. The clerk's words kept coming back to him, so he decided not to knock and draw attention to himself. Instead, he noticed there was a rather large keyhole on the door. He knelt down and, just like student A, squinted one eye shut and looked through the keyhole with his other eye. In the dim room, he could make out an empty room with extremely old wallpaper. In the center of the room was a woman sitting on a chair. She appeared to be sobbing into her hands, completely unaware that a person was spying on her. As the man continued to examine the room with one eye, he noticed that the more he looked, the more unsettling the vibe became. On the carpet, there were multiple dark red stains that appeared to be blood. The woman was extremely pale, and the body parts not covered by her clothing showed visible signs of bruising. The man unintentionally let out a gasp, and as soon as he did, he regretted it. The woman instantly stopped sobbing, lowered her hands, and turned to look at the door. The man, completely freaked out at this point, jumped up and ran to his room, locking the door behind him. Somehow, he managed to fall back asleep. Once morning arrived, he grabbed his stuff and went to the front desk to check out. He really didn't want to stay another night, but he stopped once again in front of the room next door. He listened, heard nothing. He began to wonder if he had dreamt the whole thing, so he decided to look into the keyhole once again to confirm his theory. Instead of seeing the room from the previous night, all he saw was red. At that moment, he felt shame. He realized he had made his presence known to the woman, and she must have taped up the keyhole or hung up a red clothing item to block the keyhole to stop him from spying. Either way, he knew he wanted to get out as fast as possible, so he went to the front desk and handed in his key. The clerk, the same one that checked him in the previous night, took one look at him and said, "Sir, you looked, didn't you?" According to the clerk, the hotel manager's daughter was staying in that room years and years ago when a young man broke down her door and murdered her by stabbing her multiple times. This is why the door to that room was different from the rest. Ever since then, they have kept the room sealed off to guests. And those curious enough to look always saw her sitting in a chair, crying. While most people only looked once, those that looked the second time would only see her red eyes staring right back at them. Which version did you enjoy more? While the two versions were extremely similar, there was no backstory to the school version. Either way, sometimes it's best to contain your curiosity and not try to poke your nose where it does not belong. You may not like what you see. Next, let's travel up north to Japan and look into the backstory of this traditional doll called the Teru Teru Bozu. The name itself roughly translates to shine, shine, monk. Teru meaning shine, referring to a monk. The doll can be made at home with either toilet paper or white cloth. You stuff the center of the cloth and wrap the rest around it, then tie a string around the neck part of the doll. People would then hang them up to either stop the rain or ward off rain. As the name Shine Shine Monk suggests, it's supposed to represent the shiny head of a monk, and by shine, meaning sunshine and no rain. A nursery rhyme was also created for the public in 1921, and children in Japan would sing it while making these little dolls. History-wise, the doll made its appearance in Japan sometime around the Heian period, between the years 749 to 1185. But this actually came from a similar doll from the Chinese Tang Dynasty, referred to as the cleaning girl or the cleaning maiden. The concept is very similar. When it's rainy, people will cut out a paper doll girl and hang it up in hopes that it would deter the rain. The same thing is said to work backwards too. If you are in need of rain, you can hang the doll on the eave of the roof upside down to indicate you want rain to come. I have never seen this upside down, but that's what my research told me. So knowing all this, what is so strange about this? It's just a cute little craft created to pray for rain, right? I mean, aside from the strange image of a little doll hanging by its neck. It is said that after hanging the teruteru bozu up, and once the rain stops, tradition dictates that people pour sake over the doll and let them be carried away in the river. This is also part of the lyrics in the nursery rhyme I mentioned earlier. For the most part, the nursery rhyme is pretty neutral, talking about wanting a sunny day. And in return, they will give them a golden bell and sweet sake. But in the third verse of this nursery rhyme, it kind of takes a dark turn. Here's a rough translation of the third verse. Teru teru bozu, teru bozu. Make tomorrow a sunny day. But if the clouds are crying, then we will sever your head. So, I am no expert in nursery rhymes, but that seems a bit violent. But to expand on where those lyrics might come from, some say that the teru teru bozu, despite originating from Chinese legend, actually did involve a monk at some point. This monk was said to have had the ability to bring good weather, and after witnessing his extraordinary powers, people often went to him for assistance. However, one day his luck seemed to run out. A feudal lord had come to him, asking for good weather, and the monk, of course, promised to give him good weather. Except that did not happen. The feudal lord lost his shit and had the monk decapitated as punishment. Despite the monk not being able to keep his promise, the lord still wanted to use his so-called powers. Legend goes that the monk's head was then wrapped in white cloth and hung outside on the eave of the roof to ward off rain. The origin of the cleaning girl or cleaning maiden isn't exactly happy either. According to local lore, heavy rain was ravaging the local town. A voice then came down from the heavens, demanding a sacrifice. The rain would only stop if the town was willing to present the heavens with a very specific young girl. This was not an easy choice, but to sacrifice one for the greater good is also a good way to save the town. So the girl was taken outside while she was holding a broom. The broom holding signified her sweeping away the clouds. Essentially, she was sacrificed to the heavens in order to save her town from being destroyed. A harmless little doll at first glance seems to actually carry a lot of weight, history and culture-wise. This is something super easy to make at home, so if you're experiencing a lot of rain, go ahead and give it a try. Let me know if that works for you. Third up, we have a creepy Korean urban legend that came up during my research. This is a tale about elevators, but not about the elevator game, which many of you have probably already heard of. If anything, this is about mirrors in elevators, which adds another level of creepy. But mirrors are pretty useful. They can show you what you look like, whether you like it or not. You use mirrors to make sure your hair is not all over the place, and that you don't have anything stuck between your teeth. But mirrors have always been something tied to the supernatural, both in Western and Eastern lore. We have the movie Mirrors from 2008 and its sequel in 2010. Then the 2013 horror movie Oculus, also sort of about mirrors. Then in the cursed videotape in The Ring, we see the lady brushing her hair while looking at you from the mirror. You get the idea. In many elevators, you usually expect to see a mirror upon entering, and most times it would be located directly across from the elevator doors, so you would see yourself entering the elevator. In some cases, the elevators would have mirrors on the two opposite sides, which, if you have been in one, it would create this infinity mirror, basically reflection after reflection. While it would make for a cool photo, it's worth being careful. In this tale, a specific building existed somewhere in Seoul that had this specific mirror set up in their elevator. Most people who entered this elevator would notice their infinite reflections, but most did not bother to look too closely, because why would you? But if one were brave or curious enough, they would notice that some of their reflections were actually different from the rest. This urban legend spread in the local community, but for the most part, people either dismissed it or had no interest in finding out. A group of young people, though, wanted to test this legend out. You could say that they were brave, or they were naive about the unknown. Either way, they wanted to see if it was just a hoax, or if there was actually some truth to this legend. They arrived at the building late at night, as no one was likely to be using this elevator at this time. As the group stepped in, they all looked around the infinite number of reflections. According to the legend, the 4th and the 13th reflection would be the ones to display something strange, though what it would display would be up to them to find out. So one of them began to count. They got to the 4th layer of reflection and immediately noticed something odd. The person had a serious and stoic expression on their face, as it was shown in the mirror, but the 4th reflection showed them smiling. While this would have sent anyone running out of the elevator, that was not the case for this person. They continued to count onwards, finally arriving at the 13th reflection. This one made the 4th reflection look like child's play. There was a malicious look in the reflection's eyes, and before they knew it, the reflection began to advance. Not through movement, but through dread. The group realized something was not right as the lights began to flicker and the air turned extremely oppressive. Suddenly, the elevator doors opened for them, and the group came tumbling out and basically ran as far as their legs could carry them. Some have even gone as far to say that once you see your own reflection move, death would be at your doorstep in the near future. Could this have been a trick of the light, though? Their own imagination running rampant? A cycle of self-fulfilling type of prophecy? When one is looking for ghosts, are they more likely to end up finding them or just seeing what they think they want to see? That I cannot say for sure. I never really was brave enough to go ghost hunting, nor have I ever desperately wanted to see ghosts. Maybe that's just me being cautious, but better cautious than regret my choices. Next up, let's head on south to the Philippines to explore an abandoned building with a lot of tragedy tied to it. Before we get to the haunting, though, we need to look at the history behind it. In the early 1900s, at the city of Baguio, a city located about 200-some miles north of Manila, a group of American and Spanish friars wanted to build a house for themselves and the nuns living in the region. A Spanish priest named Roque Ruano, who also happened to be a civil engineer, became the architect of the building. Construction began in 1913, with the house officially ready in May of 1915. Although an attempt was made to turn it into a seminary, enrollment was low, so the house ultimately became a vacation house for the priests and nuns. The hill where the house stood was named Dominican Hill, and the house itself was called the Dominican Hill Retreat House. Years go by, and the terrible world event known as World War II took place. As the Japanese arrived, many of the locals attempted to hide from the Japanese, sought shelter at the Dominican Hill Retreat House. Eventually, though, the Japanese soldiers made their way there and took over the house as their personal headquarters. As you might imagine, tons of war crimes were committed in the house, including rape, torture, and pretty much everyone who lived there was killed, including all the priests and nuns. This is also where a group of women were kept as comfort women, women who were used basically as sex slaves and were raped and abused by the Japanese soldiers. Things continued on this way until the war came to an end, with the Americans bombing the general area. Once the Japanese knew their time was up, they committed mass suicide as to avoid being captured, which was thought to be shameful. As if killing innocent people and keeping women as comfort women isn't shameful enough, but anyway. Once the war finally came to an end with the Japanese soldiers eliminated, the Catholic Church went ahead and restored the building so it could be used once again. In the year 1973, Diplomat Hotels purchased the house and turned it into one of their own hotel property. It went under restoration and remodeling, resulting in a unique hotel featuring religious themes. Despite the tragic history hidden behind the hotel walls, the hotel continued to operate through the 1980s. A fire allegedly broke out sometime in the 1980s, resulting in the deaths of many of the guests. It was also rumored that a nurse killed herself by jumping off the rooftop of the hotel. The owner of the hotel passed away in 1987 from a prior history of heart attacks and a brain hemorrhage. All in all, it was tragedy upon tragedy, death upon death. The hotel shut down not long after, and as a final tragedy, the building suffered major damage during the earthquake that hit Luzon in 1990. Now, knowing that so much death and violence took place in one building and under various different circumstances, it's hard not to wonder if the building is haunted. Even if you don't believe in spirits and the supernatural, would you assume that the land might feel different? The air heavier? It seems that over the years, many of those who have stayed at the Diplomat Hotel did report of strange sightings and sounds. Most of those involved apparitions of spirits who looked like Japanese soldiers, women who appeared to be shackled, and regular people who had been decapitated, wandering the hallways. Some have even reported screams, voices, and just noises when literally nothing was happening. Then you have other paranormal experiences, such as temperatures dropping significantly, cold spots, and even things being moved on their own. Those that believe in spirits strongly suggest that the history behind the building is the cause of all this. So many lives lost in such violent ways. How are these spirits expected to move on? The building was eventually taken over by the city government in April of 2005. It was renamed to the Dominican Heritage Hill and Nature Park, a very neutral and unassuming name. With no context, you would just imagine this to be a heritage and historical spot, not at all tragic. The city government thus instructed the City Environment and Parks Management Office to help maintain the building. A few years later, two function halls were added to the hotel as a means to promote tourism and preservation. Nowadays, it is said to be a popular tourist spot and a great spot for artists. Whether or not those who visited in recent years have experienced anything, I cannot say, but I wouldn't be surprised if some do claim to have experienced something out of the ordinary. Clearly, this is half history, half supernatural. If you visited this location, I would love to know your thoughts. Finally, for our last story, I am happy to introduce you to a new location not yet explored, Mongolia. It's worth mentioning that there is a difference between what we know of as Mongolia, aka Outer Mongolia, and Inner Mongolia. Inner Mongolia is an autonomous region that is part of China, while Outer Mongolia is its own country. There's a lot of history behind why Mongolia is divided up like this, which we can touch on sometime in the future. Mongolia is known more for their adventure tourism, while Inner Mongolia is more focused on cultural tourism. So what are we doing here in Mongolia? So I came across a very strange story. Part of it is real, but the other part I will defer to your imagination. This is the case for a lot of tales. Many are rooted in facts and history, but what comes after can be interpreted in many different ways. In the year 1980, a Mongolian movie called The Mirage Above the Gobi Desert was released. The Gobi Desert is the sixth largest desert in the world, and it stretches from northern China to parts of southern Mongolia, kind of half in China, half in Mongolia. This movie is listed on IMDb, but not a lot of information is available in regards to this movie, the cast, or the director. I was able to find a summary of this film, and this is what it says on Letterboxd. Quote, a young teacher in Russia is promoted school director in a small Gobi village. Upon his arrival, he uses the few available resources to gain the villagers' trust. He makes new friends, such as a young post office lady, a tractor driver unable to express his real feelings, or a zealous environmental protection inspector who is trying to arrest illegal antelope hunters. One night, the school director recognizes one of the poachers. He will have to make an important decision, unquote. And that's it. But this tale has less to do about the actual film and more about the cast and crew involved in the making of this film. I just wanted to give you a quick summary, as it is a real movie and should be mentioned. According to internet lore, once this movie finished filming, some of the cast and crew members decided to take a trip around the Gobi Desert. It's not a place most people get to travel to, and if you happen to be there, taking a trip around the area is a fantastic idea. As they traveled through the desert, they suddenly came upon a gur, or what others might call a yurt. It's a traditional Mongolia-style dwelling, which is round and fit for the Mongolian nomadic lifestyle. What was a little odd about this gur, though, is that they had no livestock around. It is quite typical for nomadic people to travel around with livestock, because how else would you come up with food in the harsh desert? Typically, livestock like horses, goats, or sheep can be found with these gurs, but this one had none. Regardless, the travelers went inside the gur and was greeted by a woman who was extremely hospitable. She sat them down and started brewing hot tea for them. They watched as the woman boiled the teapot, watched as the steam and heat rose from the kettle. It was an odd choice, since the weather was extremely hot out, and I doubt any one of them wanted anything hot to drink. But they politely accepted anyway and waited for the woman to serve them hot tea. Once the tea was served, the travelers expected to see steaming teacups and maybe even burn their mouth. But strangely enough, when the tea touched their lips, it was cold. Sensing that something wasn't right, they still politely drank their share of tea, bid the woman goodbye, and left as quickly as possible. How was it possible that they saw, with their own eyes, a woman heating up a tea kettle, and only for it to end up as cold tea? Everyone felt some type of unease, and once they got far away enough, they turned to take one last look at this strange gur. To their surprise, the desert was completely empty. No sign of the gur, no woman, nothing. Understandably, they were freaked out and continued to travel onwards, getting as far away as possible. We've heard the term mirage in a desert, where specific atmospheric conditions can cause an illusion, most commonly seen in cartoons, where characters in the desert suddenly see a palm tree with fresh water. But this was far more than a simple mirage. They did not see fresh water. They saw a gur, a woman, and remembered the taste of the cold tea. So what's the deal? The next part is also part of the legend. It is rumored that after this incident, those that were involved with the movie started to die off one after the other. I can't say how they died or how far apart their deaths were. I know for a fact that the director of the movie passed away in 1990 at the age of 59. As for the rest that entered the gur, they all supposedly passed away as well. The only one that was rumored to still be alive was someone who declined to drink the tea. Whether or not this lone survivor is still alive or not is unknown, as the movie is from 1980 and they still could have passed away from old age. Is this strange? Was it just a shared hallucination or folly ado? Or did the woman and the girl really did appear, offer them some kind of cursed tea, and then disappear? Hard to say, as I obviously was not there. I would like to think there are mysteries beyond our comprehension, but that is also quite a terrifying thought. So there you have it, another 5 strange tales from the continent of Asia. Which one did you find to be more plausible? Which of these would you rather experience if you had to choose? Whether or not you believe is not my business. And while no one has been able to provide solid proof of spirits and such, I personally like to keep an open mind. Well, that's all for now. Thank you again for tuning in, and remember to stay safe and don't do anything to attract the ghosts. For all we know, they could be lonely and looking for someone to hang out with. Till next time.